All right, hey, we're going to go ahead and get started. We've got 60 minutes. So I'm Dave Barger at Dave Barger on Twitter. My company is LunaWeb. We're out of Memphis. Julio is with Ogilvy and a number of other types of interests, and he's going to get more into that. But where he and I met was 4 years ago here at South by Southwest in a Twitter session that was booked up. There was no room left in the session for attendees. So there was a bunch of us that were rejected and kind of felt all dejected out in the hallway. So what we did is we had this impromptu Twitter session down the hall. Probably about 50 of us. It was Julio, myself, some folks that had been using Twitter for a while. The folks from Southwest Airlines, they were standing there. They couldn't get into this thing either.
IBM was there. Somebody from McDonald's was there.
Ryan Holmes with Hootsuite was there. It's just a very, very casual kind of kickback thing, and we've been in touch ever since. So now we find ourselves talking more about the whole solo mode thing, and that is a blank slide. So this is a slide here that is called the hype curve, and from I know there's a lot of agency people in here, and if you could you kind of raise your hand, the agency type folks? And okay, so not quite half. But through the course of all this social and Web 2.0, we see this hype curve thing come up all time and time again. And so many folks right now might say that right now with the whole solo mode piece, that we're up maybe at the top part of the curve, kind of sloping up there. There's a lot of hype about it, and it's just the next shiny thing, and. That may very well be, but the way these things tend to pan out is after you go through that first sharp hump there, you go down into this what they call the trough of disillusionment. It's like the reality check. It's like, hey, this stuff is not all it was cut out to be. We drank the Kool-Aid, and now we're kind of burping it back up a little bit. And what happens here towards the end is society and industry actually finds utility in these things and actually starts finding real uses for this stuff. But initially it's just a free-for-all, and it's just people trying to figure out how to use these tools. You've got developers that come up with great things, and they toss them out there and kind of leave it to industry to figure out new and interesting things to do with it. And we see this time and time again. So I like to share beware the hype curve. No surprise, hey, the mobile web has taken off. We're a web agency out of Memphis, and so this is a chart of some of the mobile accesses to a website from Q1 of 2010 versus Q1 of 2011, and it tripled in that time, and it's continues to go up. So no doubt nobody's skeptic about the mobile things taking off. So it is that wildfire kind of thing, but adoption we're finding is relatively slow. Based on sometimes the lack of reward, safety issues, privacy issues, as well as a return on investment by businesses. But that would be a different session, so we're not going to focus on that. What I'd like to do is to kind of take this slide and this opportunity to kind of share some resources. Not just from the PowerPoint, but just what y'all are using as well for the rest of y'all to share. So there's a couple of good books that are out there that I've run across. One is this Power of Foursquare. It's a relatively new book. And then there's this Location-Based Marketing for Dummies. And I'm not a dummies fan. I don't like to buy a book that's calling me a dummies, really. But it's got a lot of good information in there. And a lot of information that could be inspirational and to spark new ideas for you and how you might be able to implement things. Because, again, just like with social media, there's not the rule book that goes along with this. There's a Solo Mo podcast, but what are some? I know some of you out here are actually using Solo Mo and have been or trying to figure it out. What are some of the resources that you guys are using? Aaron, you got any? Right. Okay. Any other places? Any specific destinations that somebody might want to go check out and bookmark? Are you saying Street Fight?
Street Fight, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I hadn't even heard of that one.
Now, I know that at the beginning, Dave, I asked who was from an agency, and I saw a couple of hands up. Those who are not agencies, are you like small business owners, or what are you guys?
Sales and marketing software for small businesses.
Okay. Nonprofits?
Nonprofit regional news organization.
All right, nonprofits.
Intuit.
All right. All right. Okay, good. Excellent. All right.
What was that last one?
UX designer.
Oh, okay. UX designer. And these, you guys are being quiet. These guys are in the solo mode business. They got a startup going on.
Excellent. Great, good. So David's going to talk about some of the stuff that he's doing in Memphis. I'm going to talk about some of the things that I'm doing in Florida. But the challenge with this type of sessions is that you really don't know if you're talking to an enterprise or to a small business owner. So we have a little bit of everything. But we have the resources. We have a bunch of good links at the end. Dave is going to post the slides on his website. But I know that there's a podcast, so feel free to use the microphones. We're going to have some time for questions.
Okay. So, you know, like with everything else, hey, is solo mode here to stay? You know, is it a fad? Is it something that they need to pay attention to, or is it just going to fade away? And my favorite answer to these kinds of things is nothing is here to stay. You know, everything these days is a fad in some form or fashion. And I think as professionals, we have to learn how to leverage these types of tools that are out there to our own advantage and to our clients' advantage, and get them to realize some benefit from these before they fade away and the next thing comes along. So the 12 easy steps, right? You know, it's like, don't walk that way, really. If everybody's doing the same thing, then we're all sneeches. And I hope that speaks to some folks. If you're Dr. Seuss fans, you know where I'm coming from. But really, when it comes down to it, that's why, you know, the greatest opportunity for you guys is in this room already. It's yourselves, it's each other, and it's networking online. If you're in the same local area and you're in your same own echo chamber and you're only sharing information, then everybody else has kind of been there, done that, bought the T-shirt, drank the Kool-Aid, on and on. And so, like so many things that are changing very fast, the only opportunity to really stay abreast of it and learn and keep up with what's going on, as well as be a practitioner in it, is through peers. You're peering and networking and exchanging horror stories, exchanging success stories, and hopefully you're doing that with people who are in different markets because they will talk to you. And when you start getting down into the small city, people they get very tight-lipped about exchanging secrets and whatnot and what they're doing because you're trying to eat the same lunch. But that's one of the great things that I love, and I hope that you're getting out of South by Southwest, is you're meeting people from other areas, you're getting a lot of inspiration, and you're not after the same lunch, so that you're more comfortable sharing information.
One of the things that I see on the agency side, since I work with so many big clients like IBM and American Express, is that in the past week and a half, we're all excited about the Facebook timeline, and everybody's drinking the Facebook Kool-Aid. And to be honest, I don't see it. So being able to understand that echo chamber, that if everybody at the agency is telling you, like, oh, we have to do Facebook timeline now, you have to realize it's like, no, all of you guys are crazy. So leverage what we can do on a small level locally, because you actually are going to be able to avoid the mistakes that a lot of us in the agency world are making right now.
Yeah, we appreciate you guys making all those mistakes for us, too. So a very interesting thing that I've observed myself, and you may have as well, is that in different geographic regions, different location-based apps are more popular in one city than they are in another. My favorite example is in Memphis, Foursquare is very popular. But just an hour away in a city called Jonesboro, Arkansas, Foursquare is hardly used at all. What they use over there is GoWalla. It's just real popular there for some reason. You know, I'm sure that there could be an interesting study to figure out why that is. But So I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask these guys here. You guys said here early on that one that your startup is geared around how to help people figure out which platform to use. Is that what I heard you saying?
No.
Okay. Do you guys quantify that by platform? Okay, so maybe somebody with a more limited budget could understand from you guys using whatever tool that is that you're building where everybody's at, where they should focus their efforts if they have limited resources. And that's definitely the kind of people that we're talking about here, working with small business owners, local folks who have very limited budgets, and a lot of this they may be trying to do on their own. So that sounds like it would be a good resource to have. Are you guys up and running now?
We're in private beta.
Private beta, okay. Okay. And what's the name of the company?
We're Ubi Socio.
Ubi Socio. Okay. Just so that when you're big, you know, and whatnot, we can all go, hey, yeah, I was in a session with those guys back at South By. Okay.
Now, so we have a session hashtag for this session, and it's SoloMoRev for SoloMoRevolution. So as you see something interesting, or if you have a question, make sure that you just feel free to send a tweet and use the hashtag SoloMoRev. That way we'll see it on the stream, and then you won't forget the question, and we'll cover it.
Great. So there are a lot of different applications that are out there. And much like any application, the long tail is alive and well here with these types of location-based apps. You know, some people like them just plain dog simple, like maybe Scavenger, and some people just like a lot of noise and a lot of interface, like Whirl, if you've ever used that app, which was very busy but had a lot of great information there. It was just too busy for me. And so I think there's not going to be the single destination. Folks are using these for a lot of different reasons. My wife and I even use GoWalla for a while, and I've talked to many other couples that do this thing also. They'll go find some obscure location-based app and use it to check in and only be friends with your spouse to kind of keep – so you're kind of letting each other know where you're at kind of thing.
And there's a bunch of new apps that are being released this week. Anybody using Glancy?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
No, or what about Highlight? So play with those. It's like a combination of all of the things that we have learned in the past 5 years. One that I like personally is Path. So me, Path is like Foursquare with Twitter, with Facebook, with Instagram together. But I have to control how many. I cannot open it to all of my friends. You have a limit of friends. So that's making the conversations that I'm having on Path differently than what I have on all the other social channels. But Glancy and Highlight cross a little bit of the privacy line. It's a little bit scary. Some of the photos that I've seen on Glancy last night and things like that are things that, as a small business owner, I'm talking to the Glancy guys to see, like, how can I use it for our small business? And there's still a lot of little things that they have to keep an eye on.
How many Path users are here? You know? Okay. Yeah, it's just a different kind of beast all its own. This Glancy thing is a little different. You know, I know Julio, so we've been talking back and forth on it, but as far as like approaching somebody I don't know because we have stuff in common, it just seems a little odd at this point. But
well, it depends on the picture they have.
Right. The second thing here is you know, getting traction. And if you're just starting off in your market, and you know, I'm from Memphis. There's a million people there in the greater Memphis area, so we're talking about a smaller type concern. And a lot of folks don't know what this stuff is. So there's, I'm going to get into this education type thing here in a moment. But then also just using things to set up specials, check-in specials, just as basic as that to help people get it. It seems like with social media and now with SoloMo, there is you may have to be the person that is educating your market, or you're supporting somebody who is. Because without that education, it's not gonna grab. It's not gonna take off. You'll never reach a critical mass, and somebody's got to do it. So either that could be you, or maybe you're with a bigger company, and you guys could help somebody more closer to the ground, grassroots, get out there and start doing this and start getting the word out. And your basic check-in as far as just saving money on a special, people can understand that readily, you know, easily. So it's a great place to start. But, you know, have some things cooking in the lab, some things a little bit more sophisticated so that when things start taking off, you've got some options to go with there. So educating that community, you know, so you're educating both the merchants, the businesses, as well as the citizens or the consumers via, you know, maybe there's some opportunities there via some existing microeconomies, and I'm going to go through an example here in a second, your chambers of commerce or meetups and camps or ignites. So, like, you guys ever heard of, who here has been to a bar camp? You familiar with that concept of bar camp? Okay. Any other types of camps, like a mobile camp or a social camp, that kind of thing? So these are, since you haven't, I need to share more information about that. So these are real grassroots types of events that you would hold in your city. Bar camp deals with basically anything Web 2.0 and under that Web 2.0 umbrella. And you get a few dozen or 100 people together who are willing to present things. These are just practitioners, so you're not flying in, you know, some big dog from the big city to come talk. These are just local folks with their feet on the ground who are ready to give presentations, and people vote on those sessions. And if nobody votes for your session, then you don't get to present. It's just kind of that, but nobody had an interest in that particular thing. But if enough people do, then you're presenting. And it is probably one of the most collaborative type of events that I've ever been to. I've been to them in Memphis, have organized probably eight of them in Memphis, and have been to bar camps in I think about six different states. So these things are happening out there. If you're a bigger name and you've got an advertising budget, something like that may be an opportunity for you to help get the word out about what you guys are doing, because those are grassroots and they're always looking for sponsors and advertisers.
Right. So, for instance, for those of you guys that are new, the first time that you would go, you know, everybody comes in at 9 o'clock and they have a whiteboard and they would say, like, hey, I want to talk about this, I want to talk about that. And then the organizers would pick, okay, so this topic would happen in this room, this topic happens in another room. And usually you would do it at a university or something like that where you have a lot of space and a lot of meeting rooms and the events are free. And then the next time that you go, you actually would say to yourself, you know what, I've done something really clever or there's something specific that I'm doing over here. And then you become one of the speakers. And it's just so useful because you just get to see so many different companies that are just helping each other. If some of you use WordPress for your websites, they're WordCamps. And so sometimes they have like the developers that are talking about the WordCamp application or the ones that are talking about the search engine for WordPress. So still in the same WordPress topic, but a bunch of back-to-back sessions that are just really useful. So we have those URLs also too, so you can find if there's a WordCamp near you where it's a bar camp near you or an Ignite. And if they don't have one, these organizations have the resources to help you make one for your city, like the way that Dave has done them.
So, and these things, they come in pretty much like two flavors. You've got the ones that are focusing on creating, developing community, and then you have those that are you looking to educate. So the smaller ones tend to be more where you're a good community development type of events. The larger ones are good to educate a mass amount of people who you may not be trying to build community on them. The smaller ones are more intimate. So people are going to get a lot more connections out of a event where there's 100 people versus something like South By where there's, like, you know, I think this year they're talking about 19,000. So It's something to check out. It can be a little addictive too, but it's just definitely a very good way to get the word out about to the businesses as well as to the consumers about some of these newer things that are out there. It doesn't have to be about social media or there's been a bacon camp. Okay, so It's a platform that works on any particular topic. It's quite a phenomenon. All right, so here's an example. You know, right now, our agency does not focus on retail. So we've got retail clients, we've got B2B type folks. The B2B people right now are trying to figure out how can they use this Solomo, you know, for their benefit, because they don't have walk-in traffic. They're not a retail type space. And they see more, you know, some of them see more and more people using these types of things and want to figure out how are they going to get in the game. Because it is. Some people you talk to and they'll say Foursquare is a game. And to a large extent, it is, surprisingly. So this is a campaign idea that we're actually working on right now in Memphis, wherein when you check into a B2B space, and it doesn't have to be that you are physically there, but that you are even driving by, which is technically in the Solomo space a no-no. It's like, no, you got to go in the store. You can't just be driving by and check in. But you're not going to go into the attorney's office just to check in. But if the attorney's office says, hey, just while you're driving by, go ahead and check in. One of the things that we do is we support this organization out there that takes care of local animal strays. And we give them $500 a year. We're already doing that. But you can get involved as you drive by with every check-in. We will donate $5 to this particular cause, whatever that happens to be. And most B2Bs have something that's meaningful to them that they are giving money to. So this is an opportunity to let people participate in that just by checking in, having some say so, and then giving them an opportunity through a link, specifically on Foursquare, a link right to a donation page, which may or may not be co-branded with a B2B type of page. It may be a mobile-optimized page as well. You know, you can do this, you know, on the cheap and get it done so that they can also, if they want to, make a donation themselves. And so we see this in working with these nonprofits as a real opportunity to kind of highlight what's going on there, both highlight the fact that the business is socially conscious, as well as shine the light on these nonprofits that are doing these great things in the community. So this is one idea that is growing legs there in Memphis. So another one is one of our clients is a community performing arts center, and they are owned by the municipality. There are a lot of communities, at least in Tennessee, that have these performing arts centers that are paid for with tax money. And they have performances there, like dance performances, so ballet, different kinds of modern dance, all kinds of performing arts. And when people go to these events, that performing arts center serves as a hub to, like, date night, so to speak. And so when people go there, they're going out in their community. They're going to dinner. They're going to gas gas up the car. They may go out for coffee. If they've got kids, they may be utilizing the local daycare centers so that mom and dad can get out. There's this whole little micro economy centered around date night, everywhere, no doubt. And so what we've done traditionally with this performing arts center is use them to help educate their community. These businesses, they're locally. So we've worked with them to educate their local businesses on Facebook, on Twitter. And now here we go with the whole check-in thing as well as discounting. So here we're educating the local businesses with an economy, this little microeconomy that already exists. So we're not the spotlight here. We're spotlighting this performing arts center who's there to take care of their little microeconomy, to help educate them, get the merchants up to speed first, and then after that, the Performing Arts Center has a steady stream of a wide variety of patrons that go there. So you have the heavy metal crowd. And these are the people that are showing up with walkers to these things. And then you have a lot of young, modern dance type stuff that attracts a much younger crowd, as well as musical performances. And so they have a broad client base, and we have used them to educate their patrons, their constituents, through actually talking on the stage before a performance because it's a captive audience, handing out information, posting information and links on their website and social presences to these other educational things so that they can get it. But after, and only after, you educate the merchants in that area as well, so that there's maximum benefit to be had by the citizenry there. And so, you know, it's all about the quality of life. So that's the executive director, whatnot there. Business card, one of the things that we've seen work really well is business cards. They're cheap to print, but you can put any kind of information on there. So you put information on there about downloading the app and the savings that you can have with a check-in there. And when you start to look at some of the opportunity of this micro community and what kind of leverage you can get out of Solomo, when you start looking at a collective effort such as you check into my place, you're not going to save anything here, but you're going to get a free cup of coffee from the next guy that you go to up the road after the performance, you see? And so tying these things together so that they're all realizing a collective benefit. So, hey, you know, so you want to ask the question, you know, where's your date night economy opportunity, you know, for the folks going after the local small business, small and even micro businesses? And, you know, hey, what is your community searching for? Right? So with that, I am going to alt-tab it on over to Julio.
So Dave is asking, what is the community searching for? And
yeah.
Being the search geek, this is a nice segue. I didn't see too many questions on the Twitter stream, so hopefully you guys are following our accounts. There are usernames, and you can send some questions and reach out to us afterwards. But I come from the enterprise, so Ogilvy is a huge company, and we work with big clients. But as you can see, if you don't have a blue or red logo, I'm not allowed to work with you. So I went from the enterprise side, and I was based out of Miami, but my father-in-law passed away, so I moved to a small town, a really nice town, really, really nice. In fact, it's called Niceville. So when I moved to Niceville, and here I am with the enterprise knowledge of being able to optimize websites with millions of web pages in 50 different languages where everything wanted to be number one on Google, now I go to Niceville, and nobody's on Facebook, there are no Foursquare specials, there's nothing. So I'm searching around, and because of my knowledge, I was doing keyword research on the city of Niceville, and then I realized, well, yeah, it makes sense. A lot of people are searching for Destin, because Destin is the one by the water, beautiful white sands, and people in Destin are searching for, like, Destin vacation rentals, you know, or, like, Destin condos. But then I saw that there was a lot of search for Crestview, another city that it was near. It's also a small town. I'm saying to myself, why are people searching for Crestview instead of Niceville, which is the one next to? And then I realized that, oh, that big thing is the Eglin Air Force Base, one of the largest Air Force bases in the world. And one division of the Air Force was moving to this base, and actually doing keyword research, I saw from what state the search traffic was coming from, and that was the squadron that they were moving from the Carolinas into Florida. So people were searching, families were searching, like, I'm moving from this state to this state, I'm going to buy a house, or I'm going to rent a house in Crestview. So now I was seeing that, also, there's different search demand for people that are going to the beach, people that wanted to relocate because of the Air Force Base, and then that information is like, I was saying to myself, like, why isn't anybody taking advantage of this? Why don't we have Foursquare specials with that? And then I realized is that because nobody was helping them, nobody was getting educated, so I reached out to the Chamber of Commerce. But I didn't go to the Niceville one, or I didn't go to the Crestview one, because they didn't have enough resources. I went to the one that had the budget, which is the one in Destin. So they had the building, they had the venue where you can have meetings, they have the free Wi-Fi, and I told them, hey, I'll become a member of your Chamber of Commerce, but can we have a monthly social media committee where every month we talk about a different topic and now your members can learn different things? So like in the first one a couple of months ago, I talked about Google+. And then from there, somebody else from the chamber that's really into LinkedIn, they talked about how they were using LinkedIn. And then we had another one about QR codes. And then we had another one about Facebook pages. So because of my interest and actually my need of finding things in my small, nice community, now the community is getting organized. But with keyword research, now I knew where I should concentrate first. And in fact, this is actually working so well for the chamber that businesses that did not want to become a member of the chamber because there was nothing into them, now because of this committee, they're getting new businesses that are becoming chamber members because they want to participate in this monthly meeting. So this session is not about search engine optimization or about keyword research, what I do all day long. But if we really want to try to understand what is the backbone of social, local, mobile, you cannot optimize or you cannot create content if you don't know what content to create. So in my case, I saw that people were searching for Crestview because I was doing that keyword research. If you're an agency, do you know what people are searching for your clients? If you're a small business owner, do you know what people are searching for a restaurant, or are they searching for your hours or your location? Are they searching to find out if you deliver? If you're a nonprofit, what are the communities searching for? Do they want to volunteer with your nonprofit? Do they want to donate money to your nonprofit? So here is some keyword research I did on South by Southwest because I just wanted to relate it to something that a topic that, because I couldn't use my clients' topics. But the search information on the left-hand side is the global monthly search demand, and that we get this from Google. But now, as an example, let's look at row number 8 in yellow and then row number 11 in green. Don't use this number as this is the number of people that search for something, because a lot more people than 9,000 all over the world are searching for South by Southwest music. Use it as an index to compare one keyword with another one. So when we compare those two words, we see that in column B, we have between 6,600 and 9,900. So that's telling me that South by Southwest music is more popular than South by Southwest bands when we're searching from a desktop computer. But look at the next column. So we can actually tell Google, only give me keywords in the USA. The data is not as reliable as if you use global, but you can still compare them, and the same thing applies. Still, South by Southwest music is more popular than South by Southwest bands. And now something that is brand new is that the Google Keyword Tool can let you do the same thing, but people that are searching for mobile devices. So that would be column D, and we can see 880 for South by Southwest bands, but 1,600 for South by Southwest music. So that's telling me South by Southwest music is twice as popular for people that are searching for mobile devices. So if you're a local business and you're trying to create some type of event, or you're selling food and you want to optimize, it doesn't make sense for you to optimize for South by Southwest bands because twice as many people are searching for South by Southwest music. So this is how we can use keyword research to optimize what we're doing locally, or what we're doing in your nonprofit, or what you want to, the restaurant review that you want to put on Yelp. We have to know what keywords people are searching for, and you have to be able to compare them so you can understand which ones to use. Now, Google is also going to give you the monthly demand. And what I like to do over here is that the one that has the highest number, I put it in green, and then the one with the lowest number, I put it in red. And that helps me see what month is the one that is the most popular. So now, for South by Southwest 2011, for last year, it makes sense that, you know, row column N for March of 2011 is the most popular because that's when it happened. But take a look at, you know, when you go towards the bottom, South by Southwest panel picker, August, that's the highest one. So that's telling us that that's when people are interested, because that's when speakers are proposing topics and that's when people are trying to find out who's going to be speaking. So that's what's telling you in August is when you need to make your hotel reservation. Don't wait, because then the hotels are gone. So keyword research actually tells you when things happen. And some of the things make sense. Like Mother's Day in May, you see that a lot of people are searching for gifts, for flowers, for things like that. But this applies for any topic. So we do it for the big clients with the million-dollar campaigns. There's nothing stopping us from doing the same keyword research for your nonprofits and for the small businesses. So this is how the Google Keyword Tool looks like. Anybody in here have seen the Keyword Tool before?
couple of you.
All right. So just remember that under settings, you can actually change the language, you can change the country, and then you can tell Google, tell me desktop results or tell me mobile results. So that's really useful. One of my clients with the red logo, Adobe, is here, and you've probably seen that they're tweeting from Adobe South by Southwest. So to try to help them understand what people are searching for to find influencers, we actually have done some keyword research, and we're tracking some keywords like South by Southwest by itself, Adobe, Adobe South by Southwest, or South by Southwest Mobile. So if Adobe's doing it, why not you guys? Now, for Adobe, it's really easy to dominate the search result. Because when you go to Google.com and you search for Adobe South by Southwest, they dominate everything. Here on the right-hand side, we see that their Twitter handle ranks, the blog posts that we do are ranked, the Adobe TV, which is where they're putting their videos, is ranking. But I'm actually cheating because nobody's competing with Adobe South by Southwest. Microsoft doesn't call themselves Microsoft Adobe South by Southwest. Microsoft has their own name. Intuit is also Intuit, you know, what they're doing at South by Southwest. So you really have to make sure that you understand what people are searching for so that you can really understand if you're dominating for the result page. But in this case, it's easy for Adobe to rank for Adobe South by Southwest because nobody else is competing with them. But before we finish into, like, how can we optimize our local community with the resources, we really need to understand where search engines are now and where they're going. Anybody remember when Yahoo used to look like that? Those of you that were playing with the web in the mid-90s, we loved that. Now if we see that, it's like, really? But think of the evolution of the search engines when we went from there to Google Plus. How many of you have a Google Plus account? And how many created a Google Plus account for your business? If you don't, if there's one thing that we can learn from this session, is that you need to go back and you need to create a Google Plus business page. Because Google can find it. All of the relationships are going to help you with search engine optimization, with mobile devices. And if you're not there, your competitors are. And I'll share that in a second. So back in 2005... this graphic was really popular. It was called the eye tracking study, and we were calling it in search engine optimization world the golden triangle. And pretty much we're telling everybody that you had to be in that area because that's where people were looking at. And the way that this is done is that from the newspaper industry, they have these machines that they will give you a newspaper and they track your eye and they will see like where you were scanning in the newspaper. So they use the same technology to track where people were looking at the screen, and then the X is where actually people were clicking. But now at the bottom, you can see that the same study was done last year, and now we're tracking the different social channels. And to look how interesting it is of how people are looking. The color means that the eyes stop there for a second, and you're actually spending more time, and the X is that you're actually clicking them. So people want to see photos. So I know that I'm frustrated that with Facebook because they keep making changes, but they're making the changes because they're using this analysis and they're realizing that, well, people want to click around, they want to click on photos, they want to click on ads, so that's why they're making all of those changes. So you need to understand what people are searching for and where people are clicking, because that's going to have a big role of how you're going to be able to develop a site that is search-friendly and that people are going to find what they're looking for, especially locally if they're searching on mobile devices because the user experience is different. So we have to understand all of the changes that Google has done and Bing and Yahoo, but if we concentrate on Google, everything else would be fine because the search engines are pretty doing the same thing. They're looking for signals. So a big thing that changed the way that search engines work is actually 9/11. Because what Google was able to find out is that when you were searching for the World Trade Center after 9/11, they had old content because Google wasn't smart enough to update the pages in real time. So from there, things like Google News came about, where they knew that they had to look at the website of a newspaper more often because content was going to be there. So Google was able to understand that, well, you know, some content is fine if it's done once a year. Some content is probably going to be done once a day. Some content is going to change real time. So we can see all of the different things that Google has done. You guys remember Google Real Time, that they were actually pulling the feed from Twitter?
We did a lot of tests when that was live last year, like during the Oscars or during Super Bowl, and we can actually send a tweet from a brand new account that had no followers, but if we had the right keywords, we were able to get it on Google the second we would tweet it. So we were doing a lot of tests with that, but now they don't have it anymore because when Google released Google Plus, the partnership that they had with Twitter, something happened there, and now they're not working together. Wonder why. But what about Google Instant? Have you guys played with Google Instant where as you're typing, before you're done typing, Google is making recommendations for you? All right. That's also important for local because you need to know what people are searching for and what are the recommendations that Google is making. Because before they're done typing the name of your nonprofit or before they're typing, you know, the things that they're looking for, if Google is making a recommendation and your competitor is the one that's coming up on top, they're probably the ones that are getting the click. So the reason why I like to look at this stuff is because everywhere where you see the little stars, that's where I think that you can do something about it. You can optimize your images to make sure that Google would see it. You can optimize your news. You can optimize your videos, your blogs. Universal search is the ability to grab all of the content. But if you're not doing it and your competitor is, they're the ones that are going to be grabbing all of that local traffic. And something that is brand new is what Google is calling Search Plus Your World. How many of you know a little bit about that? A couple of hands. Really bad name, really hard to explain it. Google Search Plus Your World. I mean, universal search made sense. You know, universal search, you're grabbing everything. You're grabbing videos and images. Search Plus Your World is that Google understands that I have a friendship with Dave. We're probably already connected on Twitter. We're probably already connected on Facebook. But Google might not know that because Facebook doesn't let them see it. But Google does know that we're connected on Google Plus. So when I'm searching for something, Search Plus Your World is actually going to change my result page so that I can see some of the things that I said privately to somebody else one-on-one. And the first time I saw it, it was really scary because there were a lot of times that I would just send a message to one person on Google Plus, but it was a one-to-one communication. Then you go to Google.com, you're searching for the same topic, and then you see it as a result, and then you say to yourself, wow, did I make this publicly? Why is that showing up there? And then you have to remember that Google is actually keeping track of everything that you said, even if it was one-on-one, and it's going to give it as a result for you because they're trying to help. So if I had a conversation with Dave about what's the name of that good restaurant in Austin, and it was a one-to-one, and I'm searching for restaurants in Austin, that's probably going to show up on top because he's already my friend. So what you can see in this image, what I have in red that is a little bit hard to see, you see the icon of a little person. So that's letting you know that that's a result from Search Plus Your World. But you can turn that off. On the upper right-hand side, the other icon is a little world. So when you click on that one, it goes back to default, like a normal search. When you click on the person, it's your personalized results. So what would we do with this in a local social space? In your local community, if the newspaper has an influencer, somebody that does a lot of reviews, or somebody that's famous for talking about the different events in your city, or maybe the person in the TV channel, the reporter, something like that, are they talking about you or are they talking about your competitor? Because everybody else in your community, if they're following that reporter and the reporter says something nice about your competitor, when your potential customer is searching for that topic and they follow that reporter, they're going to see what they said, not your restaurant review. So we have to keep track of the role that influencers are going to play in local because Search Plus Your World is going to change the page for all of us. When we have big clients, we usually have this cycle that, you know, takes over an hour just to talk about this image alone. But we have to understand that there are different stages that we all take when we're doing something. In this case, you know, somebody wants to cook dinner. And you would, you know, you look for the recipe, you look for recommendations, you search somewhere else, you look for coupons, you look for codes because you're looking for discounts. You're so excited because you made this amazing dinner. You share it with Facebook. Your friends are going to ask for the recipe. And it happens all over again. So if you're a brand, there are different touch points that you can actually play with. But we don't have to limit this to big brands. You can do this cycle with any type of business that you have. What are people searching for? A graphic that I really like from Brian Solis, and this is from 2009, and again, the URL is on the at the end of the presentation. It really helps you see that there are a lot of different channels that you can go according to what you want to share. I mean, YouTube is great for video, and if I have a video, that's where I go first. But there are many other platforms where you can share your video. So this is a really nice graphic that helps you understand that there are many different resources. And then, so going back to the Chamber of Commerce, so what I did with the City of Destin is that I did the keyword research, and I saw that people are searching for Destin weather. A lot of people are searching for Destin weather. Even if you're local, if you're somewhere else, probably because if you're planning your vacation, you want to know how's the weather in May versus how's the weather in June. So it doesn't matter if you're a restaurant or you're the library or you're the airport, you probably should have a page talking about the Destin weather. Because that way you're sending a signal that Google can find, and now they're going to find your service versus finding somebody else. Something else that we found that was really popular, the Destin Fishing Rodeo. It's a big fishing tournament that they have up there. So if you're the city, you're going to talk about the event because you're doing it. But what if you're like the shopping center? Why don't you say something like, hey, we're having a sale for the Destin Fishing Rodeo. And now you have an opportunity to create a page where you talk about the 2012 rodeo. And now you have another reason for Google to find your shopping center when people that were searching for that. The same if you're a hotel, a restaurant, things like that. So if we understand what people are searching for, you can create content that is optimized social, local, and mobile. So for social, make sure that people can share it. I hate it when I go to a restaurant and you see in the menu and it has like, hey, follow us. And they have the pretty blue logo for Twitter, the pretty blue logo for Facebook, but it doesn't tell you what the URL is. Why do they? I want to find time to create a website where I make fun of all of these people. And you see it in the Super Bowl ads too. At the end, they go like, hey, follow us. And then they put like the Twitter logo. What's the handle? So you have to assume that it's the name of the company. And many times it's not. And it's like, well, that blue logo didn't help me. So make sure you don't do that. Make sure that you allow people to know what your URL is. And when you actually embed the logo, you can actually make it so that when people click on it, they retweet it. But make sure that when they retweet something for you, they actually share your Twitter handle again so that their friends get to see what your Twitter handle is. So now you have an opportunity for their friends to follow you. Before I was working at Ogilvy, I was working with Oracle, a software company. And Oracle is known for having a CEO, Larry Ellison, that whatever he wants gets done. So when he came up with the idea to have an unbreakable database, unbreakable Linux, a lot of people are telling him, like, well, don't call it unbreakable because you're just asking for hackers to break it. But he wanted to go with Unbreakable Linux, and so we went with Unbreakable Linux. And the problem with Unbreakable is that at the time, Unbreakable is also a movie with Bruce Willis. I don't know if anybody saw it. It's also a song and a video, but it's also the name of a campaign. So you really have to, whenever you do something, understand that there are different things that can have the same name, and that's why I feel that keyword research also is going to help us because we need to understand what might people find. But Google might be smart enough to be able to understand that if you're searching for a song or if you're searching for a breakable Alicia Keys, I'm going to give you the video because you're not looking for Larry Ellison. But if you don't give the search engine enough signals, you're not going to rank. Somebody else is going to rank. So make sure that as you create your pages for social and local, make sure that we have all of those signals. So we talked a little about our universal results. Quick answers is when Google give you the answer right away. Like if you type for weather and then the city, it knows what you're looking for, so it's going to just give you the information. Google Instant, I think, is going to continue to change everything that we do for local, because if Google is going to make recommendations before we're done typing, you really have to know what the suggestions are so that you can be there. If not, whoever's optimizing for that suggestion is going to win all of the traffic. In Search for Us, Your World, here's the photo. Elizabeth Spies is from the Destin Chamber of Commerce, and so I use her as a test. Because when we talk about things in the city of Destin, I'm showing her that now she's coming up as a recommendation because now she's an expert on the city. And one of the things that we do is that we want to make sure that there are other people in the community that could be like Elizabeth that talks about whatever service you're doing in your community. Because as she says something good about your restaurant and people are searching for restaurants, now her recommendation is going to show up. So that's why you need to have a personal Google Plus page, and that's why your business needs to have a Google Plus page. Because if not, when people are searching, they're not going to find you. And I want to give some time for questions, but I'll finish real quick with some other examples. So we talked about how it's easy to rank for Adobe South by Southwest because they don't have any competitors. In this case, IBM has their own conference. The name of the conference is Lotosphere, and they're also a client. And as you can see, they're ranking because everything is optimized. So we can see their Twitter handle. We can see their blog post. We can see when a website talks about them. But again, nobody else is called Lotosphere in this case. But what happens when you're searching for something else, something that is generic? Like in this case, we're looking for collaboration software. So now it's really generic, and a lot of companies are doing that. So in red, I have the different companies that are ranking, and they are Microsoft, Jive, IBM, and Salesforce, some of the different competitors. So this is why it's important to understand what you want to rank for so you can keep an eye of who else is ranking. So in IBM's case, and this search intent is in Spanish, IBM was happy because they saw that they were ranking, and a page for theirs is ranking in Spanish, but the problem is that it was the page from Argentina, and the official campaign was being done out of Spain. So now a different division actually did a better job optimizing, so they were winning the traffic. So Argentina was winning when Spain was the one that was trying to get the sale. So for your local business, do you have another division that is competing with you? How are you going to organize yourself so that you know, like, you know what, I need to rank for this and you need to rank for that so that we don't compete with each other, especially if you're buying ads, because then you guys are going to be bidding with each other. So you need to do things like this to understand who's ranking for what. And then besides searching Google.com, search for Google News to see how your local result is ranking. Search for YouTube also. In this case, we're searching the same search intent, collaboration software, and we see that a lot of people are ranking, but IBM was not on top. So they were really upset, and we had to do some more work. But by doing this, if you don't know where you're ranking, you don't know what you need to optimize, and also you don't know what you need to leave alone. Many times, the best thing that you can do for SEO is don't do anything. Because if Google can see it, don't touch it. Don't change it. Don't change the title. Don't do anything with that. So the last slide, so recommendations. Make sure you have one destination place. So what is it about your service that you want people to find? And many times it's not the homepage. If you're the nonprofit organization that is looking for, you know, donations, make sure that that's what people are going to find first. If you're a nonprofit organization and you want people to volunteer, make sure that that's what they're finding first. Don't make the pretty animation with the movement be the thing that ranks. Have the thing that people are looking for, the one that ranks. Share it with everybody so that if I go to your restaurant and I see that you have the blue follow us on Twitter, I should be able to ask the person, hey, what's your Twitter handle? And they can tell me. Many times that doesn't happen. I just see a menu with, like, follow us on Twitter, but nobody knows the handle. And I really want to know what it is because I'm the type of guy that takes a photo and I put it on Foursquare and I want to say where I am and I share the things that I do. As you can see, I like to eat. But if you don't have the Twitter handle, I can't do that. And many times the staff doesn't even know what it is. So make sure that all of your stakeholders know what is the strategy. Listen and engage. There are many tools out there like Radiant 6 that you can use as social listening. Sometimes they're expensive. There's some other ones that you can pay monthly between like $29, like BarroHeat. So you probably would want to start with something like that. But if you don't do the keyword research first, those tools only search for things that you put in there first. So if everybody's searching for the weather in the city of Destin, like in the test that I did, but you're not asking, hey, how many times people are searching for Destin weather, you're not going to know. And review monthly. somehow, I mean, you don't have to get this sophisticated analytics tool. Google Analytics works. Just try to understand, you know, what are people searching for and what is ranking and compare that month over month. So here are some of the URLs that I had, the Conversation Prism from Brian Solis, that circle that I really like, the eye tracking story from 2005 and the story from 2001. My email is .co, not .com. It's not a typo, so julio@fernandez.co. My Twitter name, Social Julio, a lot of people make fun of me because, like, why do you call yourself Social Julio? It's because when Twitter first came out, I was helping with the Oracle account, so I had at Oracle, and my personal account was Oracle Julio. Then when I left Oracle, it's like, well, I can't be Oracle Julio anymore. So 4 years ago, I switched to Social Julio, and because I thought it was clever. Now everybody makes fun of me because I'm Social Julio. But you're not going to forget, right? So we have a microphone over here. We're doing a podcast. So if you have any questions, then you can walk to the microphone, let us know, and we would love to be able to answer your questions. Or just follow us with us later. We did such an amazing job explaining everything that there are no questions. Dave, anything you would like to add? Well, we have a question. Could you walk to the to the mic?
Sure. Sorry.
And then while she's getting to the mic, think of the next question. Who else is going to go next? Because Dave is buying dinner for the best question.
Hi. My question, first of all, thank you. This is really helpful. I do marketing and social media in Austin. So local business is my favorite. I wanted to ask you about just your perception of the opportunities for creating mobile-friendly websites for small business. So I think that's huge for people to be able to locate and contact. You mentioned even when you click, you know, for a menu or when you find contact information, you can't find what you want. So we're about to sell mobile websites to local businesses at an affordable cost, and wondered what you've come across in terms of that opportunity, because it seems that small businesses still need to be educated on the benefits and then maybe sold first.
Right. No, I agree with that. And my mom is a small business owner. She has a store where she sells like fabrics and zippers and stuff like that. So she always gives me whatever, you know, people are giving her. And it's so frustrating because people are selling her like apps, and they're selling her like a QR code strategy, you know? And then they're like, oh, mom, and what's your website? It's like, I don't have a website. It's like, you know, we got to do that first. Yeah. But she doesn't want a website. But so that's the thing. Yeah, I think that's the right approach. Make sure that people have a mobile-friendly website. Work with a company like yours. But I might just put you out of business right now. If you create a WordPress site, there are a lot of nice WordPress themes that automatically make the site mobile-friendly. So if people don't have the budget to hire you, if they actually spend a little time to do it in WordPress, they automatically get a mobile site.
Right. I've heard, is it true, though? I've heard that if you have a separate dedicated mobile URL, then that it can help you with your SEO because it leads back to your
Not
main
really. We
site.
play with Google a lot, and we work directly with all of the engineers.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to say it kind of makes sense that if you had like a separate website, but not really. Google is smart enough to figure out if you have a standalone or automatically a mobile website. But yeah, that's the right strategy. You need to go out to your businesses and tell them to have a mobile-friendly site before they spend money on a QR strategy.
Exactly.
But we agreed to disagree here. and so I think that you should have a separate mobile site. And if not for SEO, but that you have different content. So not just taking your same desktop website.
All right, so I agree with that, yeah. To have different content, yes.
But slimming it down. And for the most part, that's very well received. Mm. But I have talked to one person, one of our clients, who said she can't stand it. She can't stand the slim down mobile optimized site. She wants all the same information there.
So that's good. You build her twice.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thank you. I also agree. As long as they have a mobile website with information and contact info that's easy to get to, it doesn't matter whether it's WordPress or
so before
another.
We think
site.
About near field communications and RFID tags and, you know, the macro payments.
The basics for small business.
Have a website.
Yeah.
Have a mobile website.
And an email list.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions? We have another one.
On the meetups and those kinds of bar camps, things like that, is that more for tech and ideas, or for local service providers, you know, any local kinds of businesses?
Yeah, so I've seen them of just geeky folks going, and then also a subject matter expert who's a geek but gets businesses in there, small business owners, who know that they need to be paying attention to some of this technology and don't know where to start, kind of thing. So they may show up. They may not be regulars. They'll come in, get a few pointers, and they'll kind of get started and go back and go do great things, hopefully. So it's not just for geeks.
Yeah, and it's really up to the organizers who they're inviting. If they're inviting the other friends that they have on Twitter, automatically it's going to be like a little geek fest. Yeah. But if they reached out to the Chamber of Commerce, to some of the small businesses that don't have websites, the topics that are going to come up are going to be different. And then so like that first hour where you're planning what are the topics are going to be, it's really up to who shows up that day.
Yeah. So we're a software company that provides sales and marketing software for small businesses, really kind of focused on less than 50 employee businesses. And we're adopting a go local strategy this year and trying to kind of find the places where small businesses are. We have a lot of educational content along with our software to sort of help them understand sales function, CRM, and marketing automation, those kinds of things. Yeah. So we're looking for local partners to make that happen, and I just wondered if those things also included small businesses. I mean, I'm aware of the more tech camp kinds of meetings.
Yeah.
So we started this thing called the Social Expedition, and we just wrapped up our fourth year of doing this, and we meet monthly. It's a breakfast. And so that the agenda that we seem to have really figured out works well with folks is you go from 7:30 to 8 o'clock is like mixing time, and then 8 o'clock there's some announcements about other events that are coming up later, and then you introduce the guest speaker who's just, you know, somebody locally who has some expertise in a particular area that would be of interest to the group. They present, there's Q&A, and then there's a group discussion, a roundtable thing. And that format has worked really well for that kind of thing. And a breakfast, for some folks that can't make it because they've got to drop their kids off and they can't make it there in time, that kind of thing. But we've been doing it for a while. It's a lot of fun, and it's very participatory, and you learn a lot from the other people that are there as well.
Yeah. Hey, we ran out of time, so if you got to go to the next session, feel free to